Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Each week I'm joined by one of the wonderful team from the EV Cafe, and this week, no exception, got the wonderful John Curtis. Welcome, John.
I slipped him a fiver, you know. He doesn't say these things privately.
It'll cost you more than that, let me tell you. Anyway, each week we are joined by innovators, pioneers and collaborators of our industry. And this week is no exception. An entrepreneur of real caliber in the wonderful Asif Ghaffour, the founder, chairman, CEO of BEV. Asif, welcome.
Thank you. I'm not a chairman yet, but I'm doing all the other jobs.
Oh, okay. Do you know what? I've never really got my head around at what point do you become chairman and CEO and see that, you know, and because managing director used to be the biggest bod on the block, didn't it? But now it's CEO. Anyway, we can discuss all of that and more as we get to know Asif today. Asif, tell us a little bit about BEV. I'm blessed and know a little bit about BEV. I've come to see the offices there and been around some of the things that you've been doing. But tell us all a little bit how BEV came about, what you really stand for, and etc.
So we fundamentally we're an electric vehicle charging infrastructure business. But what we're trying to do is really focus on the end customer and the end customer experience and think about how do you build a network which connects the communities back into the way they will charge their vehicles and the way this transition happens? There's a real danger that all of this new world, fourth industrial revolution, happens to people rather than including people. So really, we set up the business back in 2020, set it up with my business partner, Adrian Field and Gray, and in the middle of lockdown as well, a bit bonkers at the time, but that was the great plan. And so March 2020, as Boris was announcing lockdown, we were establishing the company. And then got Adrian to move in. It became our bubble. And then a few of the other guys came and joined the bubble at times and so on. So we effectively set up the business with those kind of guiding points, which we said we want to really drive and build something which is different, which is employee owned, which is looking at trying to reconnect people with communities, thinking about all the stuff we've done historically, which hadn't worked out, and how could we this time with our own control do it in a bigger, different way. And that's kind of the start of the journey. And it's been, you know, I'm thinking as I was walking in this morning, gosh, we're in, it was April 2021 when we acquired the first contract, which was with Greater Manchester. And we're only in April 2024, you know, and it's been a hell of a roller coaster ride.
Phenomenal. With
investments from Octopus Energy Generation, a lot of collaboration work done. The team has grown. We're in our new office since, you know, it's a third move. And it just is a very rapid process we're going through. But you still remain, and this is the bit which I always find quite interesting, you still remain eternally frustrated because you still feel like you haven't achieved what you want to achieve in this process. And that's a big challenge, really.
Asif, I'm fascinated. Can we just go back a touch? One of the things you said was that your focus is on your customers. And we are of a certain age where the customer was king. And we've lost that to a certain extent when we're selling goods and services. The customer is an inconvenience. How do you keep that customer ethos? You've got a team of people who are delivering your services for you. How do you drive that through to the customer and to the community so that you are that unique proposition?
I don't think anyone in this sector today is really thinking about the customer. So I don't think anyone's got it right. And there's a lot of machoism in, I've got 1,000 chargers, I've got 2,000 connectors, I've got 10,000, I'm going to get 50,000, Shell's going to get 100,000, all of this kind of stuff gets thrown out. For me, that's, yeah, you need the core infrastructure in place to be building this business out. But actually, having everybody in my team needs to think about the customer. So what do we ask the team to do? We ask the team to physically get their bodies off their chairs and go and meet the customer. Heaven forbid, that's a big revelation. How dare I? Finance are like, I've got spreadsheets. Why are you faffing? Or why are you asking me to go and meet? I've had these conversations. Why are you asking me to go and meet the customer? Really busy. Yeah, we're all busy. But actually, the busy needs to be focused on the things which matter. And the thing which matters in this business is actually physically being and touching and feeling and talking to real human beings who are charging and understanding their experience and then looking at ways we continually try and improve this, because that's the only way we're going to be able to do that. So we're running today a competition in the team. We call it the Mini Apprentice. I'm Sir Alan in that, you'd be glad to know. And I've got my Margaret and whatever the other chap was called, I've forgotten, Tim. I've got my Margaret and Tim, or maybe I'm too old. There's a different Margaret these days, isn't there? And I kind of, so each team has got, been allocated, they've adopted 3 to 4 sites. And they are, they go out and they go and touch and smell and breathe and feel. Some of the team had never charged a vehicle in their life. Mm. Yeah. Wow. So everyone was like, everyone gets filmed doing this for the first time. And we sit and analyze, what have we not got right on those sites? If you look at the things, why are they doing that when it clearly says don't do that? But it doesn't clearly say that, because they're not stupid. They're just basically... Our instructions aren't clear, and the way we're interfacing isn't clear. And then you're looking at different age groups and behaviors around that, and so on and so on. And there's a whole touch point, whether it's through social media touch points, whether it's real life touch points, whether it's talking to local businesses and trying to get them to feel like a lot of people are interested. What is it? How does this work? I haven't got an electric vehicle. What would I do with this? So we go and talk to the local businesses in the area and say, do you want to do a promo? We'll go for a month. We'll let you give free coffee and we'll explain to you how this works. So you can be our ambassador on the site. And that is when we talk about connecting back in with the community and making the community feel like this is their asset. It starts inside this business, step one, of a culture and ethos, which is always driven by the customer first, not by these. Yeah, the numbers are important, getting assets in the ground, but not as important as getting that customer experience right.
And Asif, that's something that I got to experience a little bit firsthand when we stood on a very wet and rainy day in Manchester.
How dare you? It never rains here. It never rains here.
I must have brought it with me, Asif. I'm so terribly sorry. But we stood on what I love was it was a disused or a redundant petrol station in Manchester, which is going to be part of one of your future hubs. And I'm really interested in this community idea, because what I've seen on social media over the last few months is particularly having free charging days at number of your sites across, you know, to bring in people, to help people get to understand it. And the community piece, how does it actually work? I mean, I'm a member of the, I've got my BEV card somewhere. I should have brought it out as a prop, really. But I'm a member and I've been to the Huntington Dobbies, I think it is, the site in Huntington, which is great. And you know, the chargers are there, but what is it, how does it connect with community? How do you make that? I mean, I hear what you're doing within the company, which is exceptional. User experience is so critically important. And I think we do it from a software point of view. I'm not sure that we've really gone into the hardware bit, but you certainly are. What is it about the community connection outside, bringing them in?
Well, the member program was quite interesting because when we started out in when we acquired the TFGM contract, we also at the same time wanted to set up this member program, and for me it was invaluable. A lot of people were quite excited. Oh, you could sell data, you could do this, you could do that. I was like, no, it gives me a touch point. I'm so desperate to actually be able to talk to people. And interestingly, when we ran a few members events and got the members together, hundreds of people turned up in a rainy evening in a central location to come and just listen and talk about their own experience. This audience today, the EV driver, is very, very engaged. And companies like us should be using that as a basis for that engagement. So the member program gives us that ability. And Huntington, I did the launch. Actually, that's in my apprentice team. I have my own. I'm in a sub team. I've been given two of the youngest people as my co-team members, and I've taken a vow of silence, which is quite shocking. They take the lead. I'm kind of standing back a bit. But they asked me to do flyers. So we did flyers. So on the Saturday, we did the launch, and on the Friday, we split up and flyered EVs around the area, St. Ives and Huntington. I got given St. Ives, and I was really proud. I'm quite competitive. You'll see this in a few of the things I say. I was quite proud that within an hour and a half, I distributed my 50 flyers ahead of the other half of the team, and so on. But that Saturday, we then stood in the car park. Who knows if anyone's going to turn up? I know it's a free power day. But we put some details on the Facebook groups. Now, majority of people were not members, but they came along because they wanted to talk to the team. They wanted to come and understand the infrastructure, the kit, how does it actually work? And they want to just talk about the journey. So making ourselves just physically available and on a Saturday, standing in a car park, talking to people is part of that community connection. What do I get out of that? The ability just to listen to what people are saying and take that feedback away and the team getting that experience from it. But that's invaluable. It's just, you know, you cannot buy that. Companies will die for that kind of feedback. But I am very, very alert to the fact that our amazing EV customer group today, I call them the Keenies. I don't know if that's a marketing term, I made that one up, but I call them the Keenies. They're really engaged, they want to talk to us, they want to share their stories. Mass market are going to be, oh, go away, shut the door, I just want to charge and go. And we need to be thinking not about the customer today, that's important, but also about tomorrow's customer when we move beyond, you know, double-digit EV car ownership. How are they going to behave? How are they going to want to use this network? And what's that customer experience going to look like? It's going to be different. And our network has got to work for them as much as it works for the Keenies today. And some of the customers who are coming to sites, we did a launch in Oldham Gateway Shopping Center. We were mobbed. I've never seen it. That was the best launch we've had 10 days ago. Every bay was occupied. What we gave away in White City near Old Trafford in a week, we gave away virtually in a day. In Oldham, it's madness. But people are driven 100 plus miles to come and meet the team. So they weren't coming for the power. We had people who hung around for 3.5-4 hours. They charged and they chatted. Some people charged, went and met some friends. They'd driven the 100 miles, met some friends, and on the way back, we're going to come back again. But they wanted to do that engagement. And that is part of this community piece. Again, I'll 100% say this business hasn't got customer right yet, but we're putting a lot of effort into trying to get it right.
It's fantastic, and it's really mind-blowing because, and don't take this the wrong way, you sound very human. you're a very connected individual. You don't strike me as somebody that is after everybody's money and, you know, like in that context of, business owners that are just driven by the money or the success or anything like that. It absolutely genuinely feels that you are rooted in community. And I'm curious because obviously your background, obviously growing up in Liverpool, and being involved in the family business, is that where Asif, the man that we see before us today, was formed? How were you formed that this beautiful man that really is delivering on the community dream in terms of charging and really thinking about the future and how people will best engage with this? How were you formed?
Gosh, we're delving into the 70s now, because this is where, kind of where the main part of the journey started, I'd say. My parents, like many Pakistani families, were immigrants into the UK in the 60s. My dad came over in 63, my mum in 68. My mum was a school teacher for a year. And then when she came to the UK, she was like, God, I need to do more than just be a housewife. So as soon as she'd got us into infant school, I think it's all called different things now. In those days, it was infant school. Got to infant school, and she was like, kids to school, I'm setting up a business. And you think about it now, you think, wow, okay. So she went off and bought a shop. And she said, I'm going to sell ladies' fashion. And she bought a shop in an area in Liverpool called Kensington. And if you know Liverpool, Kensington in Liverpool is 180 degrees opposite of Kensington in London. Yeah, it's a rough neighborhood. At that time, was beginning to get a huge heroin problem and a lot of bedsits, and it was a rough neighborhood. But we grew up there, so we moved in above the shop. My mum had to sell the house so she could buy the shop. We moved in. She didn't know what she was doing, and which kind of also brings some of the risk taking in, actually, which we can touch on in a bit. But we kind of moved in, and it was a rough area. Now, the 70s, being brown in a predominantly white area was not pleasant. Now, on saying that, I don't think I had I enjoyed my childhood, actually, if someone asked me. But we had our windows broken, people peed through the door, all that kind of nasty stuff which happened. And my mum was carrying on with the business, driving the business. And actually, for her, it was being part of that community. All the shops on the parade, everyone looked after everybody else. Everybody was kind of working together, and there was issues or problems. If she was having trouble in the shop, she used to go next door to the butchers, and they'd come with their big knives and sort that problem out for you straight away, and so on. And but that community aspect was important. And then, you know, you kind of look at, and I think that ethos stays with you because you've got people who didn't have a lot, but helping each other. And my mom kind of setting up that business in such a great environment, but also quite a risk. She took a huge risk on something she didn't really understand, and trying to make a better life, and take the opportunity and try and develop that was important as well. And I remember first year she set up the shop, she was like, if you remember the 70s and flares. Remember flares?
Oh, yeah.
Whose idea was flares? But first year, 76, we set up the shop. We sold hundreds and hundreds of flares. I remember there were six. We sold hundreds and hundreds of flares. So my mum was like, they put on a runner here. Let's buy more. Little did she realize fashion goes in and it goes out as quickly as possible as well. And so I remember in 1984, we still had those flares in black bags. Maybe one day they'll come back in fashion. They never did, actually, which is a relief for the rest of us, but not that great from at the time. But you learn from your mistakes. And part of this aspect of business setting up is, setting up this business was, and everything I've kind of done is, if you're not prepared to take those risks, you're not going to make anything out of this as well.
Mm. Sure. So risks. Risk is something which you are very used to. And you have gone on to continue to take risks. And business owners do. That's part of their DNA, I guess. But you've been really successful in that, you know, charging companies come and go. They're undercapitalized sometimes. They're in for the short run. They take government money as grants and subsidy, and then they go away again. BEV is very, very different. You've basically got an institutional lender to invest in you, Octopus, and give you 110 million quid to be outstanding. I don't know about Paul, but 110 million pound of investment would make me very, very nervous. But you're not.
Mm.
Where does your self-confidence come from? Where does your ability to take that risk and manage it come from? Is it just because it's part of life?
No, I think being given that amount of capital by Octopus Energy Generation is a serious responsibility. Mm. And the approach we've taken in the business on risk, and I've kind of said this a million times to the team, it's a fast fail model. So we've got to trial something, and if it's not working, stop it and kill it. And if we've taken a hit on something, we take the hit on your chin and you get up and you carry on and you take another position and you try and push that forward. Because that's the only way. I think that's one of the reasons why the business has been as successful as it has been to date, is that the team have adopted that. And you know, we had recently someone made an error in the budget. I was like, we closed the budget. Oh, there's an error in the budget. I'm like, okay. And the error will cost X. I'm like, okay. And then a lot of long faces. I'm like, listen, nobody has died in the process. And nobody is perfect. We're moving at a pace, and in a pace, you're going to make mistakes. Yeah, and actually, part of that process is allowing people the freedom to make those mistakes without retribution, without pointing fingers. And ultimately, that responsibility outside of this business is always mine. I will not let anyone else be sitting there with the responsibility for that. Internally, we will give them space and ability. Now, because they keep on making mistakes, there's a point where you kind of go, okay, this isn't great. That's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. But actually, you need to allow that risk-taking culture to develop in the business, and we have done. And the fact that we've also said to the employees, you are owners of this business. So we've just had our first employee event where we've actually got real owners with shares in the business. So some of the original staff have now got to that point. Means that they feel like this is part of them. And going back to that community and sharing and being able to take risk, you can see the interwoven links here now of everything we're trying to do. Hopefully it's carrying the similar strands around this as well. The key for, I learned a lesson back in, I worked for a guy called Andrew Davis at BAE Systems, and he's now the CEO of Kia. And he said to me, he pulled me in one day. I've been pulled into this special team. And I was like, why am I being pulled into this special team? I was enjoying my time where I was. And they said, and he pulled me in, he said, listen, I know the edge of my envelope is X, and I've got four of you, feel like the Avengers, but not as sexy in the outfits. I've got the four of you, and each of you have a superpower which I don't have. You need to, in life, surround yourself with people who can take what is a good skill to exceptional. And I was like, wow, that's like probably one of the best pieces of advice I've ever been given. And it's so basic common sense. So if you look at the team we've got in-house, and the partners we've got around us, we have, you know, on day one, you know, we got backed by people like DLA, Natasha Luther-Jones, just like, I love this idea. I'm going to back it. I think it's great. Don't worry about paying any bills. When you've got some money, pay some bills. I was like, okay, wow. Natasha. It's a city law firm. They're like, don't need to pay. She'll kill me for selling this story again now. But don't need to pay any bills. All of our customers were like, we're not paying our bills either, because we've heard on the podcast that you don't have to pay them. But she basically believed that, again, we didn't go, oh, let's go for Frankie's law firm because we're small and therefore we need to pick small. I said, we need to surround ourselves with the best law firm, with the best individuals on day one, because we know we're going to be successful. If we back ourselves, people are backing us. We can get to the right point very quickly. And that's that, you see that coming through here today.
Amazing. The man that we see before us has obviously taken some risks, right? And obviously, I'm guessing as a part of those risks, failed or come up against a wall or really hit something hard that has really knocked you, your confidence, and caused you to really have to kind of dig really deep, because otherwise I don't think you'd be able to stand. What is that event, what in your mind, that you sort of think was pivotal in giving you that resilience, that confidence in the risk environment?
I don't think there's any one particular. I think when I've taken risks in everything I've done, I've never taken the risk to the extreme. The risks are still calculated. And, you know, when we set this business up and we backed ourselves, originally all the capital came from Adrian and myself. And we emptied all the coffers to the last pennies. Remember, we were in lockdown, so there wasn't even the ability to ring a bank and ask for a loan because they weren't taking any phone calls. So at that point, we backed ourselves, but we also, it's a calculated risk. And I look at when I've had the responsibility, I worked for Amy for 14 years, making large, you know, a bid would cost us 20 million to bid for a public sector tender contract. And I regarded that 20 million as my money. And if I didn't feel confident that we were going to win, I didn't want to do it. And you know, put in the right checks and balances as I go along. And at a point also, pull it up. If I've got to 2 million spend and I know I've got another 18 to go, and I think I've got no realistic chance of winning, I put my hand up. You know, you've got to admit to the fact that you've actually got to a point where you don't think you should carry on regardless. And those having the right support network behind you, in that case, my CEO was like, the trust kind of gets developed that, yeah, we are going to have to take some risks here, but also this guy isn't a megalomaniac, he's just off doing crazy things. He's actually thinking this through. Those type of activities with the right support around you. And that's what we're getting from Octopus. You know, Octopus are Octopus Energy Generation are a great partner, but they also, not just from a capital perspective, but going back to my customer ethos, you know, when you think about great customer experience, you know, they come to mind straight away. So you think about, and I was like, going back to what Andrew Davis said, surround yourself with people who can push that envelope to exceptional. My background is not in delivering a customer service business. So what should I do? I should go and get investment from one of the best customer service businesses out there. My chairman is the Will Stratton Morris, is the chief exec of Cafe Nero, an amazing coffee brand.
Wow.
Which basically, if you take it back to the core, you know, they're selling, and he'll tell me off for saying this now, but yeah, they're selling coffee. You can buy coffee anywhere. Why would you go to a Cafe Nero? And yet there's hundreds and thousands of the stores because of that customer experience. So bringing those type of brains in around us to be able to think about this differently, I love that. This is where, the team go bonkers, because I will wake up in the middle of the night. Currently I'm fasting, so... wake up middle of the night anyway, but in a normal pattern on a, especially between Friday and Saturday, I'll typically get up at 4 a.m. and I've got a great idea, and I'll send Adrian a WhatsApp or Matt or John my brain a WhatsApp, and they're like, oh my god, our phones were vibrating at 5 a.m. But I'm like, oh yeah, but it was a brainwave which just came in the middle of the night. I don't know where it comes from. So my brain is buzzing, and having that kind of people around us is great, because it keeps on giving you more sources of information to continually make you buzz. And that that is the, that's where I get a lot of my excitement and energy from.
You're a very you're a very calm person, Asif, it seems. And whether this is a performance or whether this is a real man, I don't know. I've never met you. But I guess you are that calm, rational human being who makes, as you say, measured decisions. But you also touched on fasting. And I wonder, fasting, we're in Ramadan at the moment, and that places some stresses and strains on the body and the mind and how you actually function. Does your faith give you that core of belief that you will be okay, that you are able to call on a higher power, use prayer, be able to make sense of the world around you through your faith in a higher being?
Yeah, I find, you know, some people talk about meditation and they do that in the morning. Some people will follow other methods. For me, you know, I'm a practicing Muslim. I fast. You can always be a better Muslim, I think. That's always the eternal point. You never get to the end point of being as good as you should be, but I try and be as good as I can be. And it's an important part of how I operate and work and live. Yeah, so that kind of brings a level. I think it's a not just a level of calmness around it. It's a level of expectation of life, because we become very materialistic as a society.
Yes.
And everything is, you know, once I've got my first billion, I want my next billion. What are you going to do with it? There's a limitation of how many billions you can actually have, and you're still unhappy. And so going back to that, you know, this all kind of relinks back into that the community. If you look at the way that our local mosque in Manchester works and what they're trying to do with the community, we put chargers into the mosque as well, because we want to try and get people to come in and charge who are not practicing Muslims, not because we're trying to convert people, but because people think it's a barrier, and you're allowing more people in, so and more integration in society and creating better communities has only got to be better as an overall outcome around that. In my, I laugh when you said calm, because I'm quite the opposite of calm in on a daily basis. Adrian, in our team, Adrian is the sea of calm. Yeah, and I am like an electricity vault, yeah, on and off. I go to 10 and to 0 very quickly, and actually the team are kind of alert to that as well. But you get but you get to know what the right way of doing it as well, of getting to 0 and 10s. Yeah, so.
So you talked about materialistic things, and they're not really your bag. So what do you value?
For me, this opportunity, we've been put on this planet, and we've got to leave our footprint on this planet. Mm. And that has got to be a positive footprint. You know, we're living in a society today where it beyond, for me, this is sustainability, and this business is a key factor here. But you look around us and you look at the situation in, we're one of the richest countries in the world. Yet our life expectancy is going down. You know, you look at people's wealth, the disparity between very rich to very poor is growing. This isn't right. And if we're expecting community cohesion to remain and for everyone to operate and work together and live together and be supportive of each other, this, we've got to change some of these trends of what's happening. And I have used Brexit, I'm not giving a vote for or against Brexit, but I've used Brexit as an example many times of one of the drivers of why we, when we set this business up, why we set some of these ethos, because we've got very angry, disconnected people, communities out in the UK today. And everybody should be starting with the focus in their business, how can I get that connection back? Because the further we disconnect, and we're seeing that in the US, we're seeing that in Europe, we're seeing that in the Middle East, in India, and so on, the further we disconnect, the only outcome is bad. No good outcome is going to come out of this disconnection. And it's our, if I'm going to leave a footprint of something on this planet, it's going to be a footprint of an amazing customer experience for charging, of course, thank God, please help us get there. But also, more importantly, it's a footprint of that connectivity of the human is back again. And people feel like they have a voice, even if it's a small voice.
Mm. And do you know what? I think that the whole community connection that has run through the conversation today is probably why we feel such an affinity. Mm. And I know I can speak for John in this, because, you know, our business actually started the second Wednesday of lockdown, as in the EV Cafe. So it began on the, and it was forced by lockdown, in that we wanted to carry on the conversation around, you know, electrification, charging vehicles, whatever it was, that whole sustainable. And so we wanted to give people a voice. We wanted to let everybody have a place in the conversation to chat about all of the different things that were going on, but also importantly, mental health and that connection that supports positive mental health. And we've, as in the last 3-4 years, there's been many, many people been seriously affected by mental health. And the community aspect, bringing people together, I think can only serve to support that. Is that a feature? Do you see that as something that is important both within the business and within community?
Yeah, and I think part of the issue around, again, well-being, wider than just mental health, is also creating opportunity. Sure. And very often, and you know, when we set this business up again, we kind of said we're going to move from London to Manchester. That's where we'll set up the headquarters. Interestingly, I get asked a lot of questions by someone, we're doing some tenders. I get asked questions. So you're Manchester based. Would you look at Nottingham? If we were London based, I don't think you'd ever ask me that question. But yeah, we are. There isn't a wall around Manchester. We can actually get out. The place beyond Manchester, UK-wide network. But we then said we want to try and employ local people, try and get local firms, local organizations. I always said this reminded me of the cotton trade in Manchester and how that became an ecosystem, which then created opportunities. This business can be part of that ecosystem. You know, we've just got the mayor's just moved the buses to electric. We've got an amazing new electric station in Stockport, which has been built with housing and regeneration and a new park. Mm. So part of that well-being is kind of taking our little bit of what we're doing here and creating an ecosystem of opportunity, of jobs, of prosperity, of green spaces, of housing, and linking all of that together. The more we do this, the more we then employ local people, create local skills. Ultimately, you know, why can't the UK be the leading exporter of EV charging skills across the world? When they're rolling out EV charging in Africa, we should be there as companies going, yeah, we've done this. We made all the mistakes. You don't need to make those mistakes. We've spent all the money and done the fast fail. And let's create that opportunity. That is part of this well-being for me. It's how you don't treat issues like that as a negative, but actually try and create an opportunity out of it.
Fantastic.
It's a bit early in your life to start talking about legacy, I suspect, Asif, but I'm 58 years old and I do think about it. I do think about the things I'm going to leave behind. In 50 years' time, when people look back at your life, what will they say about you?
Oh, gosh, that's a big question, really. If I talk to people today and the people who I've worked with or who I've had association with, who've bumped into me in their lives, there's probably a common thread of comments, which is I'm very loyal. I've tried to help people. So when we set up the business in 2020, I rang a lot of people to say, oh, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? The fact that I had an address book to ring through, part of that, a lot of people said to me, in the last 20 odd years, whenever we've sent you someone who needs some help, you've said, send them in and I'll talk to them. You've never, ever said I'm too busy. And I was like, oh, yeah, but doesn't everyone do that? They're like, no. I was like, oh, okay. I thought I was just doing whatever else. I didn't think about it. But actually, the fact that the legacy then becomes, I tried to at least leave a bit of my brain in different parts to help other people and the next generations or peers or so on, trying to get people onto the right level and so on, mentoring and support and really try and give opportunity. But I think fundamentally, my legacy, I don't think will be, I spend a while looking at the motor car industry in the 1900s, things you do, and the legacies from there. And I think if what would make me the happiest as a legacy would be to be the person who actually got the customer experience right. Yeah, and a bit like, I'm going to use Richard Branson, the Virgin brand. People, you get that warm glow. You get it with Octopus. You get a warm glow. I want people to think about BEV and have a warm glow.
They do.
Josh, well, I already do, but I guess I'm connected in more than one way. So I'm obviously aware of the kit that you leave behind, and obviously the relationship that you have with a company that we mutually work with. So it's been a real privilege to talk to you. Mm. And I feel like that you're a person that will deliver that legacy, that community, that customer experience, not least because of who you are, but because of who the people are that you've brought around you. And I recognize that in your business, giving the ownership to the team, you know, and obviously companies like Octopus that feel that they can invest, companies like Vital, who we work with together, that can support and deliver on your high standards. But the high standards are for the customers, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're looking to deliver and for your business. John, it's a privilege, isn't it, to talk to somebody wanting to change this industry?
Do you know what? I'm sitting here taking notes, if I'm really honest, because there's been so much which is inspirational and is very, very pertinent to every business. And sometimes we forget the obvious, you know, treat the customer as though they were king. And that make that connection with community, give ownership to our people. These are brilliant, brilliant insights. And because you're busy doing the stuff, you forget. But I think, Asif, what you do is you always bring it back to the first principles. You know, without customers, we have nothing. Without community, we have nothing. Without our people, we have nothing. So you've got it right. And I think what we need to do is to take away the lessons of today and reflect very hard about what we do in the EV Cafe and in the wider community. Are we doing enough, fast enough, well enough? And should we be resting on our laurels? And all the answers I come back with are, no, not yet.
No.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share the story, really, because it's a funny, last night I was like, oh my God, I've got this call today, and I was in panic. I was in panic for a little while going, oh, I've done a few podcasts, but this is like the Jonathan Ross show. Yeah, this isn't any old podcast. And I thought, oh God, I haven't done any prep. And my CMO, Marie-France, said to me, your only prep is just be you. I was like, oh my God, that's even more stress. That stressed me out, just being me overnight. But no, you guys, you've made me quite relaxed. I think I kind of babbled on. So hopefully I've added something to your series of podcasts here, but it's been a privilege to be able to share the story.
Bless you.
Yeah, we've heard the story. We've, as John said, received some incredible insights. Mm. And we've got to know the man, Asif Kapoor, a little bit. And that's been a real privilege and a pleasure. Asif, thank you for today. Thank you to your business, BEV, for doing what you're doing to disrupt the market, and for the support from Octopus that you get and from those companies that you work with. John, it's been a joy today, hasn't it? So,
it has.
But we've had lots of other conversations over the months. Do head over to the evcafe.org to listen to all those other podcasts. But I would encourage you, Asif is very personally active on LinkedIn. We haven't got to that bit today, but does love a picture and some comments and is really pushing the envelope. And I think we've understood why today. It's really great to understand that journey. So do link up with Asif Kapoor. Do follow BEV. So that's BE.EV on LinkedIn. And also become a member of that community, because you can see there are freebies and there are bits and pieces, but more importantly, there is community. And you will help shape that customer experience for the future. Asif, thank you again. And everybody, thanks for listening for today, and have a great day, everybody.